Well, you know what? There was a flicker of daylight on the eastern horizon this morning at 5 a.m. My little heart leapt at the thought the long nights are nearly over now, only to be cruelly dashed again when I realised that the clocks go forward tonight. Still, my friends, it is only a small step back. We will continue to skip joyfully in the direction of summer. Last summer it was that we set a target for ourselves for reducing emissions on farms. And every farm that I've been on since then, it hasn't been long before the conversation ends up turning to how it is going to be done. Net zero carbon by 2050, that is. And then this week, the world's climate scientists go and put it up to us by saying, sorry, folks, wealthy nations of the world need to achieve net zero by 2040, not 2050. And yes, wealthy nations of the world does include us, in spite of how you might be feeling. What, though, would this net zero look like on an Irish farm? Is it even doable? Well, regular country riders will know that our reporter, Hannah Quinn Mulligan, has gone into a dairy partnership with a neighbouring farmer, Sean Condon. Sean set himself the challenge of trying to get his farm as close to carbon neutral as possible. So he got Cian and Alejandro from farm sustainability company Carbon Harvesters to audit the farm. And Hannah checked in with them about the results this week.
Is there another one going to calve soon?
3-4 days.
Well, Sean, the cows all look very happy. How are they today?
They're fine. I'm just ready to leave them out now because Cian is due shortly to give the results and the carbon footprint that he was trying to calculate. So that'll be interesting.
So what are you hoping these results will be?
I'm hoping they'll be positive because, you know, with practically no meal being fed, and all the forage that's been eaten is grown on the farm. But I'm just not sure because I suppose, like most farmers, I'm a bit confused as regard in relation to how these things are calculated and what's included in the calculations and what isn't included in the calculations. So I think I would be a bit apprehensive. But hopefully the fact that the farm is lowly stocked, farmed organically, with practically no meal being fed, you know, I would expect it would be favourable. I'd be disappointed if it wasn't.
Yeah, there's a steeliness to your tone there. I would expect it to be favourable. But the cows are here munching in front of us. And so when Cian came, he was obviously looking at the cows. You know, there's a lot of talk about the burping and the other thing that cows do adding to the methane. But what else was he looking at when he came out to the farm?
Well, he went through all the fields and looked at the fields, the habitats, and I suppose he was checking the type of grass in the fields and that sort of stuff. And you know, there'd be a mixture of grasses. It wouldn't be kind of monoculture ryegrass, so that would be probably a positive as well.
Your hedgerows and all the birds living in the hedges are something that you're very proud of too. I mean, would you ultimately like, if the results were positive, I mean, maybe not negative, but positive results, would you like them kind of fed into a system where you could be rewarded for that?
Of course. I think any farmer who farms in a way that, you know, helps to store carbon should be paid for it and rewarded for it. You know, so until we come up with a fair system to do that, people will be confused and unhappy and unsure of what's required.
Something that was said to us when we went into partnership together was that if we combined the two farms, we'd have enough land for 200 cows.
Yeah, well, I have no interest in doing that, especially at this stage of my life. But I just don't. I suppose, look, how you farm is choice, really. Like, and you know, we've chosen to farm extensively, sell milk direct at a good price. You know, so there's more than one way of skinning a cat, as they say. We do it that way. I'm not telling everybody they should do it that way, you know.
And it's hard.
There's a lot of things that have to be kept right. And I suppose, as well as that, you know, I think that's probably something that needs to be looked at in Ireland more. You know, we're very just, you know, focused on just expansion and turning out volume. Maybe we need to be looking at different ways and different options with different products, you know, yogurt, cheese, different things. And maybe that should be encouraged more, and farmers should be helped with that more, because labour is becoming a huge issue on farms. There are people milking 200-300 cows and they can't get labour. So, you know, it's just not working then if you can't get the labour to do it. So I think options need to be looked at, you know. Quality of life is another big one.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, we'll let these cows out and go meet Keen for a cup of tea and these results.
Okay.
Try not to look too nervous.
I'm not that nervous.
So we're all sitting down at the kitchen table with our cups of tea and Keen has got the laptop out. What do the figures mean? Can you take us through them?
So again, when we're looking at a farm, we're kind of looking at two pillars, biodiversity and carbon. So, you know, 50%, but I've never seen a farm where half the farm's habitat just, and half the, like most of the habitat is in the fields themselves. That's cool to see. Lots of intensive farms, which they reseed the fields regularly, mm-hmm. and it's just one species of grass. Maybe now they have multi-species wardens, in fairness to them. But I still wouldn't class that as habitat. Here, most of the fields. I was struggling to find fields that weren't habitat, in fairness. On other farms, I might be more lenient. but here, I was like, wow, there's lots of really nice, really species-rich grasslands. The headline takeaway is that on this farm, the total emissions per litre of milk is 0.64. So that's corrected in terms of fat and protein, so we can standardise across farms. So 0.4 kgs of CO2 per litre of fat and protein corrected milk. What the national average is, it's 0.97. So that's a 34% dairy farm.
So we're over a third less than the average dairy farm.
Yeah, and it's this is an efficiency measure, so you're very carbon efficient.
And then what are those figures over here?
Yeah, so on a farm, we can look at, obviously, a lot of the inputs, the amount of emissions that are happening, but we can then also look at how much the habitats on the farm, the fields, the woodlands, etc., are sequestering. And if we take a high value from the literature of sequestration, the value goes down to 0.12. So that's, again, that's essentially nearly carbon neutral, which is impressive.
Have you seen that anywhere else?
No. That's I work on a farm called Farm Zero C. We're trying to create a carbon neutral dairy farm. It's been always a long term in the future that the aim has been, yeah. You know, we've aimed for that. But this is the closest I've ever seen, anywhere. It feels like it's possible to create a carbon neutral area farm here, but you're still doing it efficiently because you have no fertilizer input, you've no essentially no feed input, which are two major components to carbon footprints.
And all our food comes from, all the feed we use comes from Ireland as well, which reduces the carbon footprint.
Exactly. Yeah. So one of the recommendations that Alejandro will be making to more traditional farmers is, can you source native feed coming from Ireland, because it's got a much lower footprint?
I'd be very happy with that. Yeah, I suppose I was worried that wouldn't be the case. It just, you know, it shows that, you know, if you actually don't bring much feed into the farm and you're not using chemical fertilizer, your carbon footprint is going to be lower. And I'd be very happy with that.
So then the other things we'd recommend on conventional farms are things like, can you put something in the slurry to stop the emissions coming from the slurry, a chemical slurry amendment, but that's not going to work.
There are natural ones, though. You can get organic ones, yeah.
You know, 0.10, so roughly a sixth of your emissions come from manure storage.
Okay.
So that could big help there. Mm-hmm. And then there's also then, you know, over, I'd say, 80% of your emissions come from animal digestion. So this is the methane. So is there some way of using an organic feed additive that reduces emissions? Because then you could, I think, if you did have something that could reduce methane emissions, you could become a carbon neutral farm.
Hannah and Sean, not a million miles away from a net zero dairy operation, it would seem. And you can find out more about what Kian and Alejandro do at carbonharvesters.com. That is all well and good at the level of an individual organic farm, I hear you say. But what happens if we were to scale up what Hannah and Sean have done? What are the creamery or the factory jobs that would go? What replacement would have to be found for lost income? What happens to our overseas markets and so on? Well, we're going to take this exercise one step further this morning and talk hypothetically about what such a change might look like with a man who has a very good bird's eye view of the sector. Professor Gerry Boyle was, until recently, the head of Chagask. He now sits on the board of the dairy business Arabon, and he chaired the Food Vision Dairy Group, which last year wrestled with many of these questions. A very good morning to you, Gerry Boyle.
Good morning. Yeah, delighted to be with you.
Bad delay on the line, so I won't interrupt you as we talk, Gerry. Tell me, though, we already have taxpayers subsidising milk production. How hard is it to conceive of a world where we subsidise some, not all, farmers to reduce their output.
Yeah, responding, if I might, briefly to that really interesting video, and I think it underlines a couple of points that I'd like to re-emphasise. The point about farmers being confused was made, and I think in a way that came out in the video, because, for example, farmers at the moment don't get credit in terms of carbon removals for their hedgerows or the carbon that is sequestered in their soils. So actually, when you talk about carbon neutrality and the farm being carbon neutral, that doesn't refer to the official way of measuring and quantifying carbon on farms. That's a point that needs to be communicated to farmers, because it is a confusing issue for them when they see that they're doing things that are very positive in terms of carbon storage. They actually don't get credit for it. That's one point. Second point, and I think it's also important that in the clip we heard there, the emphasis was on the carbon footprint. In other words, carbon was benchmarked against the output of the farm, the dairy output of the farm. But of course, what's really important, and I think it's a message I'd like to get across to all farmers, is that they need to look at their total carbon output on a per farm basis. In other words, they should count in the methane that is produced by their animals. So that's just by way of addressing the issue of complexity.
Let's take it beyond the farm gate then, Gerry, into what ends up happening downstream of the farm if we were to employ a model like this. What's the first thing that happens to consumer price? I assume that it ends up increasing if there's less milk around.
Yeah, well, just to put it this way, I mean, I don't think it's realistic at all to think that the model we've just heard in the clip would actually be a model that could be applied on the average or typical dairy farm. That's just not going to happen. But what will have to happen is that farmers will have to become, will have to use much less, say, chemical fertilizers, a point made in the clip. That's obviously going to reduce output unless farmers can quickly adapt in terms of alternative technologies, such as the use of clover and multi-species swards. So there will be an output hit. Now, I wouldn't envisage that in the transition to a new system, which was less chemical intensive, that there would be a significant impact on consumer prices, unless, of course, Ireland was to be joined by all other countries, say, in the European Union, in reducing output. Because simply, the simple fact is, Irish prices are determined on world markets.
Gerry, if there's less throughput going through the dairies, though, are there creamery jobs that will go?
Well, I think we're talking again about the transition, and this is a critical point. I mean, if there was to be a reduction in the intensification, say, through use of less chemical fertilizers or to addressing the animal number issue, that would have, in the immediate term, an impact, of course, on output, throughput, and jobs. I mean, in the one major contribution of the Irish agricultural sector to economic activity in Ireland, that the so-called multiplier impact of jobs, output and so forth is far greater than any other sector. For every 1,000 unit, say, euro unit of output that is reduced in the dairy or beef sectors, you can multiply it by that by 2.5 in terms of the impact on the sector. So clearly, if nothing else was to happen and just that the sector was to become less intensive, of course there would be implications for output, exports and jobs. So the challenge is then, of course, is to, and you said it in your introduction, Philip, the challenge is to find alternatives that would generate income, jobs and so forth. So there is an adjustment period. And understandably, farmers out there are very concerned about how that is going to be financed. How is it going to be managed? I was at a conference over the last couple of days, for example, and there was a discussion about what they're doing in Denmark. And they reckon the cost of assisting farmers to adjust to a new system of production would be £1 billion per year over the next several years. So there is a significant implication for farmers and for the state.
On the level of the state, we say that dairy exports earn Ireland 5 billion and that our beef exports earn Ireland 2 billion. That's not strictly speaking true, though, to say that Ireland earns that. It's actually a relatively small number of company shareholders who are earning that money, isn't it?
Well, obviously, the exports are generated first and foremost by the farmers. Farmers have a big stake in exports. And then, as you say, companies in the dairy sector, of course, the companies are owned by the farmers. So the profits are regenerated through the farmer owners. It's different in the beef sector. We have a more we have private ownership, but of course the economic activity, while it's the value is generated by the farmers and the people working in the processing industry, of course the owners of that capital do benefit. But then of course it's the none of it or very little of it goes outside of the country because of the fact that dairying and beef are not import dependent in terms of raw materials and so forth.
All right. Jerry
so
Boyle.
It still is the most important industry.
Jerry Boyle, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us this morning. Now, this debate obviously has the potential to get bitter if farmers feel that they are being left behind or ridden roughshod over. So after the break, we're going to go to the Netherlands, where they have seen a major political realignment because of the way that the government there has been handling the transition in agriculture.
Email countrywide@rte.ie.